code of silence that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a code of silence and it can't go on.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watts and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on February the 3rd, 2009. For newcomers, look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com and on the website you'll find lots of talks I've given in the past where I give you much of the history, at least as much as is known basically, of the big movement that started off in Enlightenment, turned into various secret societies and then had scientific societies at the top of them which are guiding the world along a predicted course into the ultimate age of reason, as they call it, where logic of those at the top, will be used to decide our fates and our destinies. They've already done it, basically, and they have their plans all in motion right now. Also look into Alan Watts Sentinel.eu for transcripts of these talks, which you can download and print up, and they're written in the various languages of Europe. For those who listen to me, I appreciate your donations, and I hope you keep them coming. I don't have people coming down on a regular basis with them, so I have to keep reminding people. That's what keeps me going, and it does cost money to keep this thing going, even with what I do. I don't get money from or ask for money from any of the shows I'm on. All advertising you hear goes to pay for the shows, the staff, equipment, and all the rest of it. That's the system in which we live at the moment. But things are changing fastly, as I say, very, very quickly, I should say, because we're on a roll. This century, in fact, was earmarked for the century of change, 100 years war. And the world was told, they were told from the top, from 2001 onwards, that it was going to be 100 years war. And people thought it meant physical fighting, and that was the end of it, really, to do with the Middle East and maybe a few other countries. That's only part of it. Most of the war, it's a war on what they call ignorance. And if you go down through the centuries and follow the so-called secret societies that broke out, beginning with even the Rosicrucians in England and Germany, France, you'll find they've always had a manifesto. And the first sin, as they say, is a sin of ignorance. In fact, ignorance is the sin. That's why they call the public the profane. And we have to remember that out of the Rosicrucians, they created philosophical societies, as they called them or termed them at first. These were really scientific circles made up of gentry and aristocracy, men of leisure, and that's where the Royal Society of London came out of. The Royal Society today is one of the leaders, if not the leader, in the direction of where we're going with all scientific inquiry and why we're going in these particular directions. Every famous player pretty well in history in the last 100-odd years, 200 years has been a member of the Royal Society, and they do admit in their own writings that they came out as part of the Rosicrucian order. That's out in the open. And we keep wondering what on earth were the Rosicrucians, and they've got a long history, of course, and it's all partial myth, etc. But we do know that it broke out openly at Queen Elizabeth I's court in England. The advisors, the top advisors, were all Rosicrucians. And they had no problem at all acquiring lots of money by plundering other vessels on the sea, especially those from Spain. And they were well rewarded for doing so. And they had their lodge meetings, and there's lots of history on that as well. Francis Bacon and many others were members of it. And what's that got to do with today? Well, I'm going to go into that and tell you. I'll be back with more after this break.
Don't toxic heavy metals. They're in the air we breathe, water we drink, our food, products we use, objects we touch, and they negatively impact our health by building up within the body over time. But now, toxic metals can be mobilized in a safe, effective manner with Chelarex from scienceformulas.com. Chelarex is an oral chelator developed from Dr. Alan Greenberg's clinical experience with heavy metal poisoning during his 25 years of medical practice. Chelarex contains absolutely zero synthetic chelation agents, which frequently cause adverse side effects. Chelarex contains all natural ingredients that enhance the body's natural mechanisms for excreting heavy metals and protects against reabsorption. Chelarex effectively mobilizes mercury, aluminum, lead, and 15 other heavy metals. Try Chelarex now from scienceformulas.com with this RBN special offer. Purchase two bottles, get one free with free shipping. Limited time offer. Go to scienceformulas.com. That's scienceformulas.com. Chelarex, chelation of toxic heavy metals the way nature intended.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johnglia.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264 and johnglia.com.
Why continue suffering from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people are reporting improved health and wellness using Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolution frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions. There are no reported side effects. Join others in discovering a return to natural health and wellness. Just don't treat the symptoms, eliminate the cause. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto sequences for various health conditions, and it's very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that number, 866-885-6625.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. As I said before the break, you can find out how to donate or buy that which I sell on cuttingthroughthematrix.com website. And it tells you how to pay as well, methods available. And remember, within the US and Canada, personal check is also accepted. Getting back into this 100 years war that we're now into, the war against ignorance, according to those at the top. And those at the top, I've been writing about this phase we're in now for over 200, 300 years. When you go back into the writings of the famous players in history, you find that those who went into, even before Darwin, they were into evolution. Didn't call it evolution, they called it different names at the time, but they were all into the necessity, and it was a necessity coming out again of Rosicrucian societies to bypass the old dogmas of the Catholic Church primarily. They even fostered the Protestant Church. There's no doubt whatsoever about that. Used that for a long time and then brought that down too. It fell by itself in a sense. You go into the writings of Luther himself, a place that was where Rosicrucianism was really in the leading edge at that time in Germany. And you look at his family crest, which was the symbol of the Rosy Cross. That's no coincidence. So religion's always been used for certain periods by those who know how to use it to control. control the whole world if need be. In fact, it's controlling it right now under the supposed New Age greening projects and sustainability. That's a new religion. But getting back to the past, the famous players, as I say, all were into evolution as a theory. And they were looking at all kinds of fossils and stuff to try and prove that there was no one biblical flood, but that there was different floods at different periods. In fact, at one time they wondered why. They thought the earth maybe had sunk beneath the sea and then risen again. That theory still isn't discounted yet. And they've always tried to find key or links, basically, between different species that disappear and reappear, such as sea urchins and so on. And they've written screeds and screeds of books about that. In the 1800s, many of the famous scientists of their day wrote about finding this ether or whatever that was the missing link between species. And it's a lot of nonsense, but they made their money at the time, and they let them quietly disappear from the history books rather than discredit them, because they need these theories to keep going, you see, because the theories all fit in line with where we're all supposed to go. And where is it we're all supposed to go? When you look again at the big players that promoted evolution and the religion, basically, again, it came out of the Enlightenment period, hidden behind mystery religions, but it's still based on reason. Above all the myth and magic at the bottom, it was to do with superior man and inferior man. You find that even in ancient religions, since most of the morality talks that they give you and parables are about inferior and superior types. Something that's been ongoing for forever. Therefore, the Rosicrucians had massive cover at the bottom, just like the Masons of the day do. They are the cover. Pike, in fact, called Masonry the outer portico member of the lower degrees. They do believe in what they're told. They have no reason to suspect their order, but those above them are on a different course altogether. And you have to go into who charters them, who gives you the charter for a lodge to find the source of it all. And you always generally find royalty at the top of it to give out the charters. And the Duke of Kent is generally the traditional, whoever he happens to be at the time, but he's a traditional Grand Master for the Grand Lodge of England. Now, the Royal Society, as I say, is also a chartered organization. It started off as a branch of what people thought was mysticism from Rosicrucian orders. They met in secret. They did swear an oath to each other. They also brought in people like Francis Bacon, Isaac Newton, became members. And you could not become a member if you were married and you wanted to stay with your wife and family. You had to provide for them and leave them at any cost and devote yourself to the order of the Royal Society. I don't think it was up until the 20th century they ever allowed a woman in, a woman scientist. And that's how they ran it, just like a priestly monk sect. They talked about reason and the age of reason. Went in the past and look up the age of reason that came out of the Enlightenment and see what was behind it. Because at that time, too, they were collecting very old books, having them reprinted from the pre-Christian philosophers of Greece, mainly. And they were debating a bigger world than had been allowed to them to debate by the Catholic Church. That's why they met in secret, because it was not too wise to speak openly in those days of sciences that contradicted or were in opposition or conflicted with the Bible. But they always had at their core, as I say, science at the top. And you'll find traces through their books of breeding. Eugenics, that we call it now, eugenics. And there's no doubt about it, too, that certain societies did tend to pick the mates, the male and the female, to marry together to produce the right kind of offspring. We find this with Dashwood's Society in Wickham, England. Benjamin Franklin was a member of it. They even had what they thought was what people called a whorehouse next to it. That was traditional too in those days, because they did believe that a man had to generate himself a power of generation through the sexual release. But it was more than that too, because the one certainly at High Wycombe had not just prostitutes. These were women of good breeding. They were carriers of genes. And there's been articles in the newspaper over the years, different newspapers, when they excavated that particular house or mansion, and they found underneath it the skeletons of babies. I guess they were the unauthorized offspring, because they did want offspring. And they would be adopted into a family, maybe not the father or the mother, but a family of the lodge. And they hoped to bring out certain traits, like Plato talked about in the Republic, by breeding certain traits together, especially scientific abilities or mathematical abilities. They had the hope to bring out a child with superior qualities. And that was the whole thing behind it. And that still goes on today. Royalty were trying the same thing for thousands of years, but their qualities were generally unchanneled. They were kind of wild and all over the place. They were impatient. That was their fault. But they thought that if they could breed scientific people together with the same traits, they could, in fact, come out with a superior type to guide the world along this particular path of reason and logic, where logic and those who decided that they had logic and reason would rule the world, as it should be done. And they're against the breeding of the lower types, the base types, the profane, as they called it. They like to hide that in modern times, but these old books certainly had a lot of that stuff in it. But out of these lodges and so on in this age of reason, you find the big players too that we're so familiar with. And I've mentioned the Galtons, the Darwins and so on, the Huxleys. I'm going to some of their histories from their own writings for you. And in this day and age, with all of the articles I've been reading lately to do with population control, and you do know this is the official month, they might extend it for 2 or 3 months, and all media to get it through to our heads that we've got to cull down ourselves, bring the population down for sustainability, of course. Now, this is connected. This is all connected. This movement that started hundreds of years ago is still connected with what's happening today and with those at the top. Remember, the Council on Foreign Relations is a branch of the Royal Institute for International Affairs. Private organizations massively have massive funding to give out to NGOs. They run the world. They bypass democracy. They set the trends. They set the topics. They set the curriculum in universities and schools. They set the agenda. And they were secretive societies too. It's interesting that Brzezinski recently on a video was asked the question about the Trilateral Commission, the branch of the CFR, and the CFR. And he blithely said, well, you can read all about them, it's in the open. But just before he said that, he prefaced it with, well, you understand there's always an oversight to things and a covert side to things. And he was telling the truth, because every revolutionary movement that has an outward set, a political agenda spoken to the public, always has this active inner group that will do the dastardly deeds if need be, whatever it happens to be, the covert group. So he was telling the truth about that. And before I carry on, I'll mention again an article I have read before to let you know how these articles are all being churned out at the right time until the public down below will prattle on about it in their conversations, because they will believe what they're told since they don't reason, as Brzezinski said. Be back with more after the following break. We'll be right back.
special roast hemp coffee from hempusa.org. Our coffee grows in the dense volcanic-rich soil, herbicide and pesticide-free, and in the high altitudes of Guatemala, in conditions that are ideal for natural growth of this high-quality coffee. Try our mellow cup of coffee that is ground and roasted with 25% hemp seed from Canada. With a wonderful nutty flavor that contains 18% protein, our roasters bring a unique flavor that makes this the best cup of coffee you'll ever have. Try our new special roast hemp coffee from hempusa.org and wake up your brain without the jitters. Our customers look forward to their next cup of hemp coffee. Visit us at hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. That's 908-691-2608 and see if you'll change your mind about drinking coffee again. Taste the difference. Feel the difference at hempusa.org today.
Attention RBN listeners, the Freeze-Dry Guy, providing the finest in long-term storage food since 1970. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. In actual scientific tests, these foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. These foods are delicious tasting, hearty, light to carry, and easy to prepare under the most adverse conditions. Unfortunately, many people building a family food storage program, as well as many companies providing emergency feeding programs, simply do not give you enough protein, especially animal protein. No other food satisfies like animal protein during stressful times. If you're a meat eater, you will definitely want our freeze-dried meats and entrees, but we do offer vegetarian items as well. Visit freezedryguide.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. It's an article from the Daily Mail I've read before on the 5th of January, 2009. It says here, Britain must set a maximum population level if it is to avoid destroying the environment. See, they put the environment at the top now. We've had years of propaganda, so it's a holy thing. So they use that as an excuse. And then they add this part, since we're into this terrorism everywhere joke, and putting national security at risk. So national security and environment. So they create the trends, and then they use this as an excuse to curb population growth. Even though the same foundations that are pushing all of this. This one's from the Optimum Population Trust. It's a worldwide organization started in England. And look into who funds them. And I tell you, get lost in the foundations and their machinations as they travel through from one front to the next front to the next front to get the funding there. This private organization. Do you vote in the Optimum Population Trust? No, you don't. So how come they have ears to politicians, top politicians? They have the ears of them, but you don't. How come? Democracy? What a joke. We never had democracy. And then they go on to give you the fake numbers and projections that Malthus would have done with his graphs and his charts, and that's what he used back then. And they've never been right since. But the whole thing is to scare the public. And then show you a picture probably of somewhere in London in Russia, just to get the point across. You know, the picture, the headline, that's what most folks see, it sticks in their mind. Then they'll prattle on about it. at their parties and so on, to show that they're up to date with the news. But I've never reasoned anything through. So where does this all this come from? This is the century, remember, of change. People think, because of the slogan that was coined by the big marketing experts, change is good. They never stop and say, what kind of change? Obviously, wouldn't you rather ask them what they mean and what their goals are before you say it's good? It might not be good for you at all. But slogans don't work that way. You're meant to parrot them. And people do. They parrot slogans. It works very well. I've gone through Bernays and all of that crew. I've gone through the culture creators that were interfaced with the CIA totally. And same with MI6 in Britain, MI5, I should say. And all the other security agencies. They gave us the culture of the, definitely the latter part, the last half century of the 20th century. Right up to the day. And they're running it still. Let's go into one of the main characters, a member of the Royal Society and every other great society, and no doubt took many, many oaths. To lead the world through argument along this particular route, that's how they do it. And this is by the grandson of Charles Darwin. It's called The Next Million Years by Charles Galton Darwin. He spends a lot of the book, again, comparing man with animals and saying, my God, you know, they'll outbreed and they won't have the food and yada, 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 and all this kind of stuff. But his big thrust is the wrong kinds will breed. He makes no bones about that. He says it openly. It's the wrong kind who will breed, you know. And he actually mentions the wrong kind. He actually couches it too, if you're going a lot further. He says here, in page 93, he says, a man is promoted on account of his individual merits without any thought about the consequences for the distant future. In a less abnormal world than the present, his increased prosperity should lead to a man's having a larger family and those of the less prosperous so that the good qualities inherited from him, the one with the most money, should gradually become diffused throughout the population in later generations. The present time, the exact opposite happens all too often, in that he's likely to have a smaller family than the average. In fact, success in life is at present antagonistic to success in survival. Then he goes on to talk about parasites and so on, and how even parasites have a function. He says, it's always necessary to remember that nature itself is quite non-moral, and that there are many qualities by which we no means admire, which nevertheless are often regrettably effective in the struggle for life. All through the animal kingdom, one of the most successful roles is that of the parasite. And there are states of human society where such a parasite as a professional beggar is as successful as anyone else. Something of the kind is unfortunately true in Britain today, or just now. It says the people we are really encouraging are not those that we think we are. For a great many of the people who get good promotion are contributing less to their share to the next generation. He said, at present, the most efficient way for a man to survive in Britain is to be almost half-witted. He said, that's what he thinks of the public. The profane, you see. Completely irresponsible and spending a lot of time in prison, where his health is far better looked after than outside. On coming out with restored health, he's ready to beget many further children quite promiscuously. And these problem children are then beautifully cared for by the various charitable societies and agencies until such time as they have grown old enough to carry on the good work for themselves. It is this parasitic type that is at present most favored in our country. If nothing is done, a point will come where the parasite will kill its host by exhaustion, and then, of course, itself perish miserably and contemptibly through having no one to support it. Now, though there may be occasions in human history when something of this kind can happen, there is no fear that it should happen to mankind as a whole, for a parasite is essentially subordinate to some host. And man claims, and claims reasonably, to be master of the world. There's reason for him to be subordinate too. So there's no danger of mankind adopting the role of the parasite, he says. This character who didn't do much work in his lifetime. Back with more after this break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hi, I'm Roger Mason, the inventor of Beta Prostate. Men, are you getting up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom? Is your love life not what it used to be? Many men don't realize these issues are often related to their prostate health. Prostate problems start about age 40, and by 50, over half of men already have a prostate problem. This only gets worse. What can you do? See a doctor for checkups and take Beta Prostate. It is the well-researched natural formula that supports a healthy prostate, and it's made with pure beta-cytosterol, 11 essential minerals plus vitamin D. This is the best-selling prostate formula in the world. It's safe, it's healthy, and what every man over 40 should take for good prostate nutrition.
To try Beta Prostate risk-free, dial 1-800-362-5848. Call today for Beta Prostate and get Roger Mason's best-selling book free with your order. Dial 1-800-362-5848. That's 1-800-362-5848.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johngalea.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264 and johngalia.com.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix, reading from Charles Galton Darwin's book, The Next Million Years, printed in 1952. I think he himself was a physicist, and he was into eugenics in a big, big scale. I wouldn't say just as a sideline, I think that was really his favorite topic. But he talks about specializing the breeds of humanity, specializing by breeding. And he even suggests at one point that, tongue-in-cheek, of course, that he could only make the women of Britain and maybe the world accept the seed, the sperm, of the fit, the aristocratic class like himself. They could breed out all the bad traits of humanity and bring in the good society. But on page 130, after talking about the different benefits of inbreeding as opposed to the demerits of inbreeding as well, he goes on to say this: there may be those who will regret that man will not attain these pinnacles of specialization, that means through breeding, but the failure is inevitable. In order to create such specialist breeds, there would have to be a master breed at the summit, you see, in the Great Pyramid. And this would be a totally different kind of thing from all the other breeds, because it would have to create itself. How would it create itself? Through genetics? Perhaps. Then he goes on to say, at every turn, the argument leads back to this question of the master breed. Now remember what Plato talked about in the Republic, the master breed and so on, the guardian class, and how they breed specific humans for a special task and so on, just like domestic animals. He says nothing can be done in the way of changing man from a wild into a tame animal without first creating such a breed. But most people are entirely inconsistent in their ideas of what they want created. On the one hand, they feel that all the world's problems would be solved if only there were a wise and good man who would tell everybody what to do. But on the other hand, they bitterly resent being themselves told what to do. As to which of these motives would prevail, it seems at least probable that it would be the resentment, so that if the breed should arise in any manner, it would be extirpated before it could ever become well established. It is, however, imaginable that there might be a part of the world in which the breed was accepted. Now, this is straight out, really, of The New Atlantis by Bacon. He gives this allegorical concept of a place that eventually became America, of course, where they'd have a secret society running the world, although they'd have a form of government on the outside. So he says, maybe a part of the world in which the breed was accepted, and that this part should gain superiority over the rest of the world, because it could develop various suitable breeds of specialists under the control and direction of the master breed. That's Plato's Republic, and it's the New Atlantis right there. And by the exercise of the skills of these specialists, it might overcome the other nations. So it's appropriate to look a little further into the matter. Imagine that through new discoveries in biology, say by suitably controlled doses of X-rays, which he, by the way, was experimenting with on different tissues, it becomes possible to modify the genes in any desired direction so that heritable changes can be produced in the qualities of some members of the human race. I may say I do not believe this is ever likely to be practical because there's so many, it's not predictable, that method, you see. It says, but that does not matter as far as concerns the present argument. The first success might be in some physical attribute, for example, by making a breed with longer and stronger legs so that it could jump a good deal higher than anyone can at present. But passing to more important matters, there might be a breed which could think more abstractly, say a breed of mathematicians, or one that could think more judiciously, say a breed of higher civil servants. And that's who will they bring in first, by the way, the bureaucrats and the scientists, if they haven't done it already. And the question arises of a more precise prescription for what the qualities of the master breeder are to be. It is usually best to build on what one already has, rather than to start from nothing. So the natural procedure would begin with existing rulers. The existing rulers. Now, I've told you, you have an international club of all those who've gotten the top in every country, the long dynasties that have held on to power and their wealth. That's a criteria to get into this club. So this will begin with existing rulers, since these have already established themselves as acceptable to at least a good many of their fellow creatures. One would collect together, say, 100 of the most important present rulers. Among them, of course, should be included a good many who exert secret influence without holding any overt office. Do you know where he got that part from? That's the same thing as Carl Quigley was talking about in Tragedy and Hope and the Anglo-American establishment, when he says those who are on the exoteric in the political scene will not have the true power, says the technocrats, like the Maurice Strongs and these characters, the Brzezinskis, the Kissingers, and a whole host of them, would have the real power. That's what he means. So he knew, it was already on the go, you see, when this book was written in the 1950s. Among them, of course, should be included a good many who exert secret influence without holding any overt office. That way they're not really, they don't have to answer to the public. And tell them to get on with business of settling what the master breed should be. It's impossible to believe that any such body of men would ever reach agreements on any subject whatsoever, so this plan fails. In a search for the qualities of the master breed, the next idea might be to appeal to the wisdom of our forefathers. Plato and his Republic devotes much attention to this very subject. Why not then find a Plato, give him his group of recruits, and let him educate them for 30 years according to his prescription, though perhaps fortifying it by the findings of modern educational theory, the result should be the master breed. And he says, but this one will not do either, for Plato was not educating the master breed, he was educating the civil servant breed. It's not about these that there's any difficulty, it's the finding of someone to fill the role of Plato himself. It all comes back to the point that we do not know in the remotest degree what we want, for I do not count as an answer the one that would usually be proposed, which would be that the type required should be good and wise, while at the same time showing a special favour for the particular enthusiasms of the proposer. The reason for the impossibility of making a prescription for the master breed is that it's not a breed at all. To call it so is to change the sense of the word. Breeds are specialised for particular purposes, but the essence of masters is that they must not be specialised. You see, they must be wild. That's what he means. Now remember, he and others have written in their books that those who rule the world will not alter themselves with brain chips or anything else. They're not hampered either as they grow up through the educational system we all have. They're impervious to most of the laws because they're wild. They said they must retain their abilities of survival, their capabilities of survival, because they will be steering planet Earth. That's what he means by that. So he says, they have to be able to deal with totally unforeseen conditions, and this is a quality of wild, not of tame, life. No prescription for the master breed is possible. In these considerations, I've been assuming the license of supposing that we might be able, really, to change human nature in a heritable manner. And this is far beyond all probability. Returning now to more practical considerations, there seems no likelihood whatsoever of a master breed arising. All through history, the most formidable difficulty every ruler has been selection of a successor, and the best intentions have been nearly always disappointed. Indeed, it is notably surprising how very seldom the choice has been well made. The immediate cause of these failures has been the difficulty of the subjective judgments on the basis of which the choice must be made, but fundamentally have arisen from a cause in the deep nature of mankind. Of all animals, man, again, you're an animal, you see, is the most ready to try experiments, and there are always candidates. Far too many candidates who regard themselves as fit members for the master breed. This is a message for all those who think they're going to get up there. Who regard themselves as fit members for the master breed. This quality is a characteristic of a wild animal, and it will always prevent man from domesticating himself. He will always prevent the creation of the master breed, through which alone the rest of man could be domesticated. The evolution of the human race will not be accomplished in the 10,000 years of tame animals, but in the million years of wild animals, because man is and will always continue to be a wild animal. He promotes that those at the top should be not subject to the laws of the land or the world. They should be wild. And if you look at a lot of the aristocrats and the lifestyles that they have and the things that they do, they get off with everything because they're naturally wild. And these are the ones who aren't bothered with human decisions too much. They make quick snap decisions. They're wild. That's the type he's favoring here. And he goes into it deeper and deeper in his book. And it's interesting, too, that you'll find Plato mentioned over and over in all of the Rosicrucians publications. You'll find them talked about by members of the CFR, the Royalty for International Affairs, the Fabian Society, Wells and many others always talked about Plato and his Republic being their favorite book. They're giving you a clue because Plato advised this particular specialized breeding where those at the top will retain their wildness, the survival capabilities, and those down below will be the domestic herd that are either brought up to strength for wars or culled down in times of peace, and they'll be bred for the particular function in life. And that's exactly where the whole area of eugenics and genetics is being guided today into that very, very thing. Now, here's an article that ties in with this again, because they're using the global warming for the world scam to bring the world together. Remember the Club of Rome in their book called The First Global Revolution. They said they came up with the scam idea after looking at everything that would unite man, they'd blame man for destroying his environment and the atmosphere itself. and look where it's got us today. You've got a depression going on. What's the odds of all this happening at once? You've got a depression, a financial depression going on, and that was rigged, of course, to be at the right time. And we're going totally global. They're regionalizing the whole world together. Unemployment skyrocketing. Your five agri-food businesses are tightening the reins on food. They will bring shortages. That's part of the strategy to get us all to our knees. And at the same time, they're going to push all these carbon taxes, etc., which are further going to hurt us all. We're going to be dominated, you see, by Mother Earth. And they planned that a long, long time ago. This is from Cozy News, K-U-S-I. Cozy News San Diego. The amazing story behind the global warming scam by John Coleman. The key players are now all in place in Washington and in state governments across America to officially label carbon dioxide as a pollutant, that which we breathe out as a pollutant, and enact laws that tax we citizens for our carbon footprints. Only two details stand in the way: the faltering economic times and a dramatic return towards a colder climate. Climate isn't cooperating, no matter how much they spray it and use HARP. The last two bitter winters have led to a rise in public awareness that there's no runaway global warming. The public is now becoming skeptical of the claim that our carbon footprints from the use of fossil fuels is going to lead us to climatic calamities. How did we ever get to this point where bad science is driving big government to punish the citizens for living the good life that fossil fuels provide for us? Remember, too, this all ties in with the need for depopulation. Don't ever forget that when you read any of these stories. The story begins with an oceanographer named Roger Revell. He served with the Navy in World War II. After the war, became director of the Scripps Oceanographic Institute in La Jolla in San Diego, California. Revell saw the opportunity to obtain major funding from the Navy for doing measurements and research on the ocean around the Pacific Atolls, where the U.S. military was conducting atomic bomb tests. He greatly expanded the Institute's areas of interest and, among others, hired Hans Suisse, a noted chemist from the University of Chicago, who was very interested in the traces of carbon in the environment from the burning of fossil fuels. Revell tagged on to Suisse and studies and co-authored a paper with him in 1957. The paper raises the possibility that the carbon dioxide might be creating a greenhouse effect and causing atmospheric warming. It seems to be a plea for funding for more studies. Of course, it's a plea for as they get all their funding from these studies, so they drag them on as long as they can. Funding, frankly, is where Revell's mind was most of the time, it says here. He then hired a geochemist named David Keeling to devise a way to measure the atmospheric content of carbon dioxide. In 1960, Keeling published his first paper showing the increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and linking the increase to the burning of fossil fuels. It's kind of like deciding what you're going to go out and look for and finding it, isn't it? The two research papers became the bedrock of the science of global warming, even though they offered no proof that carbon dioxide was, in fact, a greenhouse gas. In addition, they failed to explain how this trace gas, only a tiny fraction of the atmosphere, could have any significant impact on temperatures. Now let me take you back to the 1950s when this was going on. The cities were entrapped in a pall of pollution from the crude internal combustion engines that powered cars, trucks, and so on. Cars and factories and power plants were filling the air with all sorts of pollutants. There was valid and serious concern about the health consequences of this pollution, and a strong environmental movement was developing to demand action. Of course it was. They were all getting funded by the big foundations who started them up and told them what their job was. Government accepted this challenge and new environmental standards were set. Scientists, engineers came to the rescue. They reformulated fuels, developed for cars. The new cars were high-tech, computer-controlled engines with catalytic converters. By the mid-70s, cars were no longer big-time polluters, emitting only some carbon dioxide and water vapor from the tailpipes. Likewise, new fuel processing and smokestack scrubbers were added to industrial and power plants, and their emissions were greatly reduced. I'll add to that that they also moved most of the factories out of the country. But it says, but an environmental movement had been established, and its funding and its very existence depended on having a continuing crisis issue. So the research papers from Scripps came at just the right moment. And with them came the birth of an issue man-made global warming from the carbon dioxide from the burning of fossil fuels. Royal and Keeling used this new alarmist to keep their funding growing. Other researchers with environmental motivations and a hunger for funding saw this developing and climbed aboard as well. Research grants began to flow and alarming hypotheses began to show up everywhere. And I'm going to skip some of it here because then he goes into some of the main players here. He says, back in the 1960s, this global warming research came to the attention of a Canadian-born United Nations bureaucrat named Maurice Strong. Well, he was picked up by Rockefeller. That's the man who groomed him for this position, and Rockefeller Foundation runs the United Nations. We'll be back with more after this break.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johngalea.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264. And johngliha.com.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix, reading an article about the setting up of this great global warming scam. And talking about Maurice Strong, the frontman for Mr. Rockefeller, who picked him up when he was very young, about 15, I believe, and groomed him for his position at the United Nations. It says here, Maurice Strong was looking for issues he could use to fulfill his dream of one world government. Well, it wasn't just his dream, it was his master's too. Strong organized a World Earth Day event in Stockholm, Sweden in 1970. From this, he developed a committee of scientists, environmentalists, and political operatives from the UN to continue a series of meetings. Strong developed the concept the UN could demand payments from the advanced nations for the climatic damage from their burning of fossil fuels to benefit underdeveloped nations. That's nonsense. It ain't going to help them. a sort of CO2 tax that would be the funding for his one world government. But he needed more scientific evidence to support his primary thesis, so Strong championed the establishment of the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Now, as I say, he's just a leg boy for the Rockefeller Foundations. Remember that all times. This was not a pure climate study scientific organization, as we've been led to believe. It's an organization of one world government UN bureaucrats, environmental activists, and environmentalist scientists who craved the UN funding so they could produce the science they needed to stop the burning of fossil fuels. Over the last 25 years, they've been very effective. And he was on and on and on, always dreaming up ideas of Armageddon, etc. But this article goes into Al Gore and all the rest of them, who took over the championing of this global warming scam, because it's a way, remember, not only to bring the world together, something that's at war with the world, and it happens to be man that's at war with it. So they only save us all through saving us from global warming, but we've got to reduce the population as well, you see. And this article also goes in to explain Al Gore and how he said years ago, even though the evidence was turning against him in global warming, there would be no argument on this. It was a mandate. And I've said that before. It doesn't matter what you say or what the weather proves. Who are you going to believe, Al Gore or your lying eyes? Simple as that. And also, Roger Revelle, by the way, who dreamed up this thing in the first place, and other ones, once he'd retired, came out to government and said the whole thing was based on fake science. It's in the article as well. And they're all told to leave the room, because the agenda is the agenda. But he and other ones came out and said to wait another 20, 30 years before they make this a mandate, because the proof was not in. So the global warming frenzy was becoming the cause celeb of the media. After all, the media is mostly liberal, loves Al Gore, what's all run and owned by the same guys that own the foundations, isn't it? They love Al Gore, loves to warn us of impending disasters and tell us the sky is falling, the sky is falling. The politicians and the environmentalists love it too. But I'll put this up, a link up on my site at the end of the show, and you can go through it at your leisure, because it really does give all the statements Al Gore gave out regarding the fact there will be no argument about this at all. Also, look into the history of Al Gore and see who groomed him. It's really intriguing. Really, really intriguing, because Armand Hammer took over the grooming of Al Gore. You're talking about secret societies. These are the guys. Armand Hammer had an apartment next to Lenin, and then Stalin, and still ran an empire back in the US during the entire Cold War. Quite something. Well, that's a rushed bunch of info for tonight from myself and Hamish, Ontario, Canada. So it's good night, and may your God or your gods go with you.
With recent internet.